We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when there's not enough wheat. We feed you.
Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, bringing you episode 11 of Wheat All About It, or what I call John Moffat, Kingmaker. I suppose there's a number of ways to interpret the title. For one thing, Moffat is king of the hill this year in terms of having bred the variety which led Eastern Washington's 2016 varietal survey. SY Ovation isn't the first successful variety Moffat's been associated with, but it may well be his last. Moffat retired at the end of 2016. Another way to interpret the title is that Moffat was always the fellow making other people look good, as in, always the kingmaker, never the king. You choose. Moffat was in San Antonio for the Pacific Northwest Wheat Quality Council meeting in late January when I ran into him. I should have made sure to interview him somewhere quieter, and I apologize for the sound of chattering and laughing in the background. Live and learn. Get past the background noise, however, and you will hear the fascinating story of a young man who was going to be a lawyer and became a wheat breeder who looks like a jazz musician. Go to our Facebook page to see the white soul patch Moffat has growing above his chin. He says it's to let people know he's over 60, even though his hair is still black. I asked Moffat why a retired breeder comes to the Pacific Northwest Wheat Quality Council meeting.
I've been participating in quality councils for wheat since the early 80s. And the one in the Pacific Northwest, the Western Wheat Quality Council, has been, in my opinion, one of the finest meetings and most, I would say, proactive and congenial. A lot of different parties from a lot of different disciplines working together to make wheat better, and that's in my ballpark. I am retired, but I still love wheat, and I love this meeting, and I was invited to come, so I couldn't turn the invitation down.
Remind us of your career. Tell us about your evolution as a breeder.
I was a late bloomer. I worked for a wheat breeder while I was working on my undergraduate degree in political science. I was going to go to law school. And took a few law classes, briefed a few cases, and I couldn't stand that. My professor said, well, if you don't like that, you're not going to like law school. So I went to work for the federal government back in D.C. For about 6 years, and started a family. had a son, and my wife wanted to get back closer to grandparents. So we left Virginia and came back to Oklahoma, where I was raised in my later years. And I remembered that experience working for the wheat breeder. Called up to just say hi, and they invited me to come back and work on a master's. And so I did that. I worked for a few years for the university full-time and got my master's on the side. And then I went to work for Dr. David Worrell down in Vernon, Texas at Texas A&M as an assistant breeder for a couple of years. And I met a guy down in Obregon, Mexico on a wheat tour within Cimit, and his name was Raleigh Sears. He happened to be the breeder at Kansas State, and he invited me to come to Manhattan and work on my master's. So same basic scenario.
Your PhD?
My PhD. Same basic scenario. I worked full-time at the university there as a hard white wheat breeder for the state of Kansas, and after about 6 years got my PhD and then went to work for a private seed company, AgriPro Wheat, and worked in the Great Plains, Southern Great Plains, for about 12 years breeding hard red winter wheat and hard white winter wheat for AgriPro. And then our company kind of did a kind of a morphed into a little bit different scenario. We had two world-class breeders from Texas and from Kansas decide to leave the university and come over into private industry, and they just happened to live in Texas and Kansas, where I was breeding wheat for. And so I became a fender for about a year, catching some of the mud the wheels were slinging off. And but we had always, from the early 80s, looked at the Pacific Northwest as an opportunity in breeding. And with this new company that was formed, AgriPro Wheat, we had control of our destiny. And our bosses, Raleigh Sears, David Worrell, and Rob Bruns, asked me if I'd consider going to the Pacific Northwest and trying to launch a new venture and begin a new breeding program in the PNW. And that's something that had always been a dream of mine, start something from scratch and see if I could was up to the challenge. So I thought about that question for about three minutes and then told him yes, and then I had to go home and tell my wife we were moving to the Pacific Northwest. And that was about 1999, and the rest is kind of history.
Yes, it is. It is history. I wonder if there's a door here. Nope, there's no door. Let's go back in the corner a little bit more. I'm going to get you right back here. So Ovation, SY Ovation, a variety you developed, topped the list of the soft white winter wheat varieties in 2016. I think that's the first time that a private company variety ranked number one on the list. It must feel good to retire on such a high note. What makes SY Ovation so special?
Well, that's a good question. It's just a really strong genetic package. I've been fortunate enough to release quite a few wheats over the years, and was involved in a variety named Jagger back in Kansas, and Jagaline when I worked for Kansas for AgriPro Wheat back in Colorado. I thought when I came up with this combination Ovation and saw it in the field, it didn't take a rocket scientist to know it was pretty special. And it looked like about the most complete variety that I'd ever developed. There is no perfect variety, at least I haven't found one yet. And if I developed one, Mother Nature would find a flaw here in another year or two. You know, it was a cross that was made down in Corvallis, Oregon. Was invited to come down and walk through Jim Peterson's outdoor crossing block because our greenhouse hadn't been completed yet up in Cheney. And he gave me the opportunity to just kind of wander through and look for things that looked interesting to me. And I saw a couple of parents that looked good. And so there were a couple of Oregon State experimentals that... I sat there with my scissors and tweezers for 3 days, emasculating heads, and then pollinated for 3 days, and then went home. And then about 2 months later, I went back and got the seed that I'd made of those crosses, and it just happened that this particular combination put a lot of good things in the basket.
Now, you just said that there are no perfect wheats, but that SY Ovation was your most complete wheat. But SY Ovation does have a flaw in that it was hit by low falling numbers. What's your thought on the falling numbers issue that has bedeviled the industry in 2016?
Well, that's a real challenge. I mean, the 2015-16 crop year was extremely, I haven't been in the region that long. I've been there 15 years. But that was the weirdest growing season I'd ever gone through. We were having high 30s, low 40s temperatures at night, temperatures that within the grain filling period that were spiking up into the 80s and 90s when we finally started warming up. So we did have some. We did have what they were. You know, the scientists have been talking about. Either severe drops of temperature from a day high to a night low, or an extreme jump in temperature from a low to a high during the critical dry down period in grain filling, and we definitely experienced that this year. And it is, I would say that that's a concern. That's a serious flaw in that wheat, and it's not the only flaw in the wheat, but it's one that's causing some economic havoc. On the other side of the spectrum, I guess you kind of have to weigh your risks. I know most producers that I've worked with are risk avoiders, and you have to consider the region that you're in, what you've experienced in the past, what you anticipate in the future. Do you anticipate that you're going to have the same kind of year that we've had, that was kind of an anomaly, in my opinion, this last year? Or is it a greater risk that you're going to have rain during on your harvest ripe wheat? It just so happens that Ovation has really good sprout tolerance. It's as sprout tolerant as many hard red wheats, much more sprout tolerant than almost all hard or soft whites. So on one end of the spectrum, it's very good for sprout tolerance for this late maturity alpha amylase trait. It's on the other side of the spectrum and not very good. So producers are going to have to weigh the advantages and disadvantages. It yields very good, great test weight, pretty good quality profile, a good stripe rust resistance, pretty good variety. But yeah, you know, all as Mother Nature will teach us, every variety is going to have some level of risk.
In the race for varietal dominance in the Northwest, do you think 2016 will be the year we look back and see this as the point that private company penetration began to dominate the market?
Well, you make this sound like it's a war, Scott. I came up here, I tried to slip in here and tried to add something positive to wheat culture and add something positive to farming. And didn't want to displace anybody, replace anybody. And I don't think Ovation is going to replace. Genetics is kind of a pendulum swinging back and forth. I've had good years and I've had bad years. And the public programs here are, in my opinion, fairly well funded, and have a wealth of talent. Their mandate is a little bit different from a private plant breeder, but the breeders that are on staff at the local universities, in my opinion, are world class, and they'll continue to work hard to develop good genetics for the region. And Ovation's time as number one could be very short lived. I know that Aaron and Mike at WSU are both very good breeders, got a lot of years ahead of them, and they'll be very productive, and I'm sure that this pendulum is going to swing back another way one of these days.
You received your education from a public institution, and you worked in public institutions, so you know something about the system. What do you see as the pluses and minuses of being a breeder for a private company contrasted with being a public university breeder?
Now, don't get this wrong. I wouldn't have minded having been a public plant breeder. As a matter of fact, I was a public plant breeder for a while, even though I was kind of a non-tenured graduate student plant breeder. But I also saw, you've gone to the counter the post office, you take a number. That's almost the way it was in graduate school. My graduate professor, Raleigh Sears, had about 15 graduate students, and when I wanted to see him, I had to take a number. Really busy, a lot of committees, publication commitments, teaching commitments, plus being a plant breeder. And I love teaching, but I also love plant breeding and boots on breeding, walking in the field, looking at material. And as a private plant breeder, I was afforded a lot of opportunities to walk fields, and I had administrators that kind of served as an umbrella to prevent any distractions, and I could put all of my efforts into looking at material and trying to develop really good varieties. That's what I think the major difference is. Both of us have a mandate to serve our farming community, but you have to release wheat as a private breeder. You have to find some product that fits some place for your market in order for your company to maintain its viability. So
breeders work on a 7 to 10 or even longer timeline. Let's do that again. Breeders work on a 7 to 10 year or even longer timeline. What's in the pipeline from your program?
I would say that, Ovation, we released Ovation about 7 years after the cross was made. It was developed through using double haploid technology. We were one of the first U.S. companies to adopt that as a major focal point for our breeding program. And since I was a new program, a lot of energy went into the Pacific Northwest materials that I was giving to our lab in Junction City, Kansas. Now, virtually every university in the U.S. that has a wheat program has a double haploid program that speeds up the breeding process. It doesn't make the crosses any better. It just means that you get to see your product 5 to 6 years sooner than you would normally see it. So your breeding program is basically put on a rocket sled. And not only do you get to see it sooner, you get it in your crossing block sooner. So the whole system is sped up. And not only do you see the good stuff sooner, you see the bad stuff sooner. You can get rid of the bad stuff sooner. So adjusting to environmental changes and market pressures would be much more, we can do that much more effectively with double haploids and the new technologies we have with markers. So I think probably that 12 to 15 year timeline is a thing of the past. We're all going to be working just about like we're spring wheat breeders, and 6 to 9 years from the time you make your cross until the product's put in the field.
Now, I probably came out and interviewed you 5 or 7 years ago, and we talked about hybrid wheat and about how Syngenta was involved in hybrid wheat. When will we see the first hybrids bred for the Northwest? And explain to me why the focus on hybrids.
Well, we're working on hybrid wheat. Primarily, our company it's an international company. Syngenta has got breeding programs in India, Russia, Western Europe. We've got affiliates in Australia. We have work going on in Africa. And, we've got this tendered offer from China to purchase our company, so there's a good chance that we're going to have a program in China one of these days. So our company is really interested in food security. It wasn't too long ago we were seeing wheat you could take to the elevator and sell it for $15. Some guys selling spring wheat for $17, $18 a bushel. And that opened the eyes of a lot of boards, corporate boards around the company, around the world, and kind of spurred an awful lot of interest in the business community to the potential of wheat as not just a cover crop or the kind of crop that hasn't gotten a heck of a lot of attention from an investment side to one that they're really focusing on and wanting to invest in. So food security, number one. Because we know that I worked with hybrids back in the 80s when I first started with AgriPro. I was an inbred breeder, and hybrids were being developed by DeKalb, Cargill, AgriPro. Many different companies were involved in wheat and working in hybrid wheat. And we entered our varieties into the regional nurseries, just like the Western Regional that we have here. There was a Southern Regional in the Plains. And over a five-year period, during the time we were testing our hybrids, if you looked at over years' performance across the entire region, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, the top 10 entries were all hybrids. So they weren't the highest yielder in every location, but they're most stable across all those environments. So stability in the marketplace, higher production for the farmers, that from my standpoint is the reason that we're working on hybrid wheat. I'm sure that it will probably be, you know, we talked a little bit in this meeting that we're in today about GM wheat, and I believe in the next 15 to 20 years there's going to be so much pressure on our ability to produce food, we're going to have to go down the GM route to increase and stabilize food production around the world.
So who is taking over your program?
There is a plant breeder in Indiana right now with AgriPro Wheat Syngenta. Her name is Jennifer Vonderwell, and she is mother of two boys and a husband that works in the airline industry or aircraft engine industry. Anyway, she's a really fine breeder in our soft red breeding program. She knows she understands the requirements of soft wheat quality, has dealt with winter hardiness and snow mold issues in Michigan and in New York and the northern stretches of the United States, and has released some really nice varieties. So I think she'll step in and do a really fine job here in the Pacific Northwest.
So I've known public institution breeders who retire but continue to breed wheat almost as a recreational activity. Do you have any plans to continue playing with wheat breeding on your own?
Well, some other people may have plans for me to do that, but I really don't have any plans to do that. Right now, I have a blank slate in front of me. I have bought a new fly fishing rod and a new reel, and I've got some trips lined up with my wife and with my boys. You know, for the last almost 35 years, during the summer, when they were off doing things, I was walking in wheat fields. I've got a collection of t-shirts that my wife has brought back from different places that I've never been to. And so I'm going to spend time with my family and do some traveling and do some fishing.
I have to admit that when I'm actually doing an interview, I'm not listening to the answers 100%. That's because I'm often thinking of the next question and how I can ask it without tripping over my tongue. So frequently, when I go back and review interviews in the process of creating the podcast, there's a sense of rediscovery, a feeling of, wow, that's really interesting stuff. That's how I felt listening to John Moffett, Kingmaker. Hope you enjoyed the show. Until next time, I'm Scott Yates, hoping you'll tune in again to Wheat All About It!
Out in the country where a woman's called a gal, she's more than a lover, she's a farmer's best pal. We marry them for life, we marry with a vow, and even in the night we know how to plow. Our children have two parents, our children have a home, they don't grow up with no edible syndrome. We're the backbone of this country, the spirit of its soul. Best you ask for whom the bell tolls. We feed you, we feed you.